मनीषा पसंद
मनी लिखा है बा
बिल्कुल
एवरीथिंग मॉर्निंग हाउ आर यू टीचर
we are okay chair with surviving
I know let's survive the year is coming to an end very soon.
Yes, we're looking forward to tomorrow as well.
Oh, okay. We are ready for tomorrow.
Yes, Chair, we did some preparations yesterday over the weekend and the previous day. Yes, we are.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Now let's ensure that at least we push and we will see how far do we take it. Thank you very much. I left with 1 minute to start. Is the office of the Ocha General logged in?
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, Chairperson. We are here today, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, have you flighted your slides?
Chairperson, we do have access to flight deck. We'll wait for Chairperson to go ahead and then we will, once we get that go ahead, we'll do that, Chair.
I think we can start uploading. It's 5:30, we need to start. Good morning, honorable members. I can see Honorable Breitenbach is here, Honorable Mfokeng, Honorable Ndlozi, welcome back. Honorable Horn, Honorable Nivot Drachens, Honorable Swart. The Office of the Auditor General. Is the Office of the Chief Justice here?
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. We are here.
morning, SG.
Yes, morning, Chairperson.
How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Denise. Sir.
Enjoy Alifunuk's niggas appointment. Yeah, yeah. we've given up.
Is that so?
We've given up. We've tried all our best, all our best.
Oh, yeah, and it's not good.
But I'm trying to have a one-on-one with him, so that we can.
Oh.
Yeah, we can try and see what we can do.
Yes, maybe that is the best. Then it can lay a foundation.
Okay, but we will speak after the meeting later today. Or this evening. Yeah, I'll phone you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay,
Office of the Auditor General, we will start with yourself. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, and members. Let me just try and unlock. Okay, morning, members and Chairperson. Chairperson, we've got two senior managers that are going to be taking us through the two presentations that we are going to make. This morning, we've got Rehan Mohammed Ali, who looks after the Department of Justice and Correctional and Constitutional Development, Human SA Human Rights Commission and Justice Administered Fund. He looks after that portfolio. And we've got Tendani Mafonyiswa, who looks after the Legal Aid Office of the Chief Justice, Public Protector, Special Investigations Unit, as well as the President Funds and Guardian Funds. So we'll start with Rehan to take us through the presentation on justice, and that will be followed by the presentation by Stanley. But we will be guided by yourself, Chair, whether we should do one presentation, engage on that, or just do both presentations and have engagements later. We'll be guided by yourself, Chair.
Now, I think to be fair to members, let's do one presentation, so, and then members will ask questions and engage with the presentation, then we'll move to the next one.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I think without any waste of time, I'll hand over to Rehan to take us through the presentation on justice. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, GB. Chairperson, I think just in terms of the focus of our presentation, it will be the 2019-20 audit outcomes for the portfolio split into three presentations, as Madibe alluded to. The presentation, the format of the presentation, Chairperson, is very much aligned to the previous year's presentation. In fact, the focus areas of the audit are also very much aligned, in the sense that we still look at the fair presentation of our financial statements, whether the transactions and balances for the different audit entities are fairly reflected in the financial statement, and whether they are free of material misstatement. We look at the reliability and as well as the usefulness of the performance information. Chairperson, I'd just like to point out that for the current year, because of the restrictions placed on our work by the pandemic itself, we would normally have looked at all material programs in the different entities, but for the current year, we limited ourselves to one material program in each of the entities. For the Department of Justice, we would have ideally wanted to look at court services and the NPA as well, but for this year, we only looked at the state legal services from a usefulness and reliability perspective, and therefore our audit outcomes are confined just to the state legal services from a performance information perspective. Obviously, from a financial statement perspective, we look at the entire entity. And then also we then look at compliance with laws and regulations, and in looking at compliance with laws and regulations, it is specific focus areas that we look at, and those focus areas are still consistent with the previous year, being procurement and contract management, expenditure management, planning, strategic planning, consequence management, as well as in terms of the quality of the financial statements submitted. Okay. Just in terms of the audit outcomes themselves, what's considered a clean audit opinion is where we have no material misstatements from a financial statements perspective. We find that the tested or the selected programs that we test, from a performance information perspective, the information there is reliable and useful, and then there is no material non-compliance with the specific laws and regulations that we, or the specific focus areas that we test against laws and regulations. So when we look at what's considered financially unqualified worth findings, it would mean that your financial statements are credible, they are free from material misstatement, but there might be issues in either in terms of compliance or in terms of performance information reporting. And then I'm not going to go through all of the other opinions. I'm only going to go up until the qualified opinion, because that's the only three opinions relevant for this particular presentation. That opinion is when we have aspects of the financial statement that are not credible, either through limitation or disagreements with management. In that instance, that particular line item will be qualified, and the remaining set of financial statements will still be credible apart from the particular items highlighted in the audit report. Like I said, we continue with a very similar theme to the previous year in terms of accountability. You'll note that this particular diagram is in the form of a wheel. It's done so that we can reflect on if any one of the different spokes of that wheel is not operating effectively, that wheel won't turn either effectively or if it's really significant issues in that particular element, then the wheel might not turn at all. As we go through the presentation, you'll see we'll reflect on what the particular part of this particular accountability wheel is not working as effectively as possible. We look at internal control environments and we look at the assurance provided in terms of who is responsible for each of those elements of the wheel. And then just in terms of the justice portfolio itself, we're looking at the Justice Department itself, the two public entities being the Legal Aid South Africa and Special Investigations Unit. And we're looking at the three funds administered by the department, being your Justice Administered Fund, your Guardians Fund, and your President's Fund. We also, in this particular presentation, reflect on the Human Rights Commission's audit outcomes. The audit outcomes of the public protector will be presented separately by my colleague, as well as the outcomes of the Office of the Chief Justice. Okay. And from an overall audit outcome perspective, you look at the last 3 years, 2017-18, until the year that we've assessed now, 2019-20, and you'll see a stagnation in the audit outcomes. You'll see the Department of Justice being qualified in all 3 years, as well as the Human Rights Commission having concerns either in compliance or performance information over the 3 years. What is to really take note of here is the nature of the findings in both the department as well as in the Human Rights Commission are very similar in the 3 years. It's not necessarily new non-compliances or new areas of misstatement that have been identified, and unfortunately the urgency with which those matters have been addressed is not necessarily as effective as we'd like it to be. But then when you look at the green elements also, you'll see that there is sustainability in achieving those clean audit outcomes in the SIU as well as the Legal Aid, Guardians Fund, President's Fund, as well as Justice Administered, TPF, Justice Administered Fund. I think in those environments, we need to commend management as well as the accounting officers, the audit committees there. In order to sustain a clean audit outcome, you need to have your daily disciplines in place. You need to have competent staff that are there and there's stability in leadership positions there, and adequate reviews are being done in terms of your financial statements, your performance information, as well as the review of compliance with laws and regulations. So I think those entities need to be commended for their achievement there. You'll note that for the remainder of the presentation, I'm going to mostly, unfortunately, focus on the areas of improvement in the Human Rights Commission and the Department of Justice, and there will be very limited presentation on those clean audits because there isn't much to reflect on in those different entities. Then if we look at the three different areas and we start with the financial statements. In the financial statements, the Human Rights Commission, I think they also have to provided us with credible financial statements when we received them for audit on the 31st of July. We didn't need to do any material adjustments to the financial statements that they provided, and that's been the case in the previous year as well. So that also has been sustained. From a department perspective, you'll recall that last year they were qualified on two aspects, being the movable tangible assets as well as the contingent liability. And if we go back a few years, I think maybe 3 years, 4 years, we used to come across numerous errors in terms of their disclosure notes from areas like accruals, commitments, your infrastructure assets. A lot of we used to have financial statements that were basically littered with errors. And the quality of those financial statements has improved over the years in the sense that in the current year, we didn't have much misstatements outside of the qualification areas that we're reflecting on here. But when we reflect on the qualification area, especially in terms of the contingent liabilities, the concern there is that at year end, The department basically does not have processes in place to determine what the likely financial implications of each of their cases are. And this particular list, it's basically a listing of litigation against the department, either from malicious prosecution or from damages or from HR matters, whatever type of litigation against the department. But then those matters are handled by the state attorney officers. And at year end, there's no process to make sure that the state attorney provides the information on each of those cases at year end or after year end to say this is what the status is and this is the likely financial implications of it. This particular qualification has been in the environment for 3 years, and I think we stress that the only way that this particular qualification can be addressed properly is if there is collaboration between the state attorney, the state legal services, the NPA, as well as the finance department of the department. And that there's been some collaboration, but it's not enough to make sure that you get the quality of reporting that you require in order to mitigate against material misstatements. And from a asset management perspective, the department did put in a plan to address that particular qualification and did do their verifications in the third quarter. However, in that verification, there was a number of assets that they couldn't verify. I think the total assets was over 9,000 assets, and it was, in terms of value, about 181 million rand. So they disclosed that correctly in the financial statement, and that's why it was not qualified, but it does reflect on improvements required in terms of control over your assets. I do know that they are doing a lot of work in that space and even continued in terms of doing the investigations and verifications and reduced the balance subsequent to the audit report being signed. But the fact that there were so many assets missing is a reflection that there is improvement still required in that, and it's something that the department needs to keep on its radar. Otherwise, it might very easily slip backwards into a qualification. Then, like I said, from a performance information perspective, we looked at one program in each of Human Rights Commission and the department. In terms of the department, like I said, we looked at state legal services, and there are quite a number of indicators in that particular program. We've tested all the material indicators in there, and then we had issues with the performance information relating to two material indicators, both of them being in the state attorney environment. One of them being the number of appearances that the state attorney makes in the High Court, and that was also reported in the previous year. So you see that as much as a lot of the issues of the years have been addressed, some of the significant issues, both from a financial statement perspective, a performance perspective, and a compliance perspective, remain in the environment. So in that instance, the collection of the information regarding to that appearance is very inconsistent. Some state attorneys will record even where they only brief counsel. Other state attorneys, even though they appeared in court, wouldn't count it as an achievement. And that was very similar to what was the error in the previous years. And then there was another one in terms of reduction in terms of capital capital payments for medical negligence and unlawful arrest. And there, the problem there is just a review in terms of the schedules, because when you compare the information to the supporting information, you'll notice clerical errors like adding a zero or removing a zero. When it's 3 million, they recorded as 13 million. And obviously those small errors result in big misstatements. And unfortunately, there were numerous errors like that. And therefore, we were unable to, or there was a material misstatement reflected in terms of that one. In terms of the Human Rights Commission, I think the significant problem is in terms of document management. We had limitations basically with two indicators where evidence couldn't be provided to support the achievement. And both of those indicators were in terms of particular events that were held, and the planned supporting evidence would have been your attendance registers or calendar invites or something like that. And unfortunately, they didn't keep a proper audit trail of those those achievements in terms of all those attendance registers and whatnot. That particular environment, I think upfront you need to know what your supporting evidence is going to be, and on a quarterly basis, obviously, once you've done it and you've reviewed it, you should have gone through either giving it through to internal audit to do a review and identified all of these gaps and corrected them. So unfortunately, you'll see even in terms of a compliance with laws and regulations, particularly procurement legislation, the document management in the Human Rights Commission needs to be improved upon, because in some instances the achievements might well be valid, but it's unfortunately just not supported, and we therefore have a limitation from our side. And then in terms of legal aid and FIU, we didn't have any material adjustments required, and those performance reports were credible. From a compliance with laws and regulations, again, it is in the justice environment, I think the most significant procurement non-compliance is still in the environment of the state attorney. In terms of quality of financial statements, you'll see the department, because they have a qualified opinion, have also a non-compliance relating to that qualification and material adjustments that were made. Again, in terms of prevention of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, you'll see the department has quite a large balance in terms of irregular expenditure. Consequence management is limited to the Human Rights Commission in the sense that there were a few instances of irregular expenditure identified in the Human Rights Commission in the previous year. Unfortunately, those investigations into those instances hadn't yet commenced at the time that we were performing the audit. We did, however, receive a commitment that they will get the urgent attention that they deserve after the audit process had concluded. And then from our expenditure management perspective, we reported on failure to always pay suppliers within 30 days in the justice environment. When we look at the status of internal controls, you'll see it's very much a reflection of the audit outcomes themselves. In terms of proper record keeping, you'll see Human Rights Commission being yellow in terms of document management, like I said, having that audit trail for performance information. And then also when we get into the irregular expenditure, you'll see that there's also document management issues in terms of procurement and contract management as well. Daily and monthly controls, similarly with justice, that being related to your contingent liabilities. Just in terms of the justice administered funds, there's just as much as it didn't relate into any misstatements in your financial statements, there was some non-adherence with the requirements of the financial instructions that they just need to pay attention to. There was numerous instances where the daily controls weren't done with the necessary QK in terms of the completion of the related forms and the review of those forms. So it much didn't result in any negative audit outcomes. It's just something that management needs to pay attention to. And then compliance with laws and regulations, again, it's the red is reflective of the material mistake, material non-compliance that we have in the Human Rights Commission as well as the department itself. Again, in terms of assurance providers, you'll see a lot of green in terms of the five audits that receive the clean audit outcomes. But then you'll see on top, you'll see Guidance Fund, SIU, and Jeff having been assessed as providing some assurance. That's just a reflection on some of the non-material findings that we'd had in those different environments in terms of Guidance Fund, it relates to the clearing of the suspense accounts. In terms of Jeff, like I said, in terms of adherence to the financial instructions, in terms of SIU, I think there were more minor errors identified in the financial statements that needed to be corrected, nothing material. So it's not necessarily anything that needs intervention from outside parties, but it's something that management can improve on in terms of just addressing those minor issues so that they don't escalate to the audit report in future periods. From a justice perspective, the limited assurance assessed there is purely because some of the significant issues that they have been in the environment for quite a while, and as much as they've developed action plans and they've implemented them to some extent, the timing of that implementation, the review and monitoring of that implementation needs improvement if they are going to address the qualification areas and the compliance areas, in, especially in terms of the state attorney. So that's why it's reflected as limited assurance being provided. From a financial health perspective, we didn't identify any real issues in terms of the sustainability of sufficient funds to continue as going concern or anything like that. However, in the department, we have been concerned about the escalating debtors balance in terms of the state attorney, the legal services provided to our department. You'll notice that it's not the amount outstanding is now 2.4 billion, which is basically around how much they spent in the 1920 financial period. That balance has grown from, I think, a billion rand to 2.4 billion rand in the last 3 years. So it continues to increase, and some of the departments, especially the Department of Health in some of the provinces, don't have the financial resources to pay those balances, and they our concern is they will continue to increase in the subsequent periods. In terms of SIU, I see that there is also a collection, SIU as well as LASA, there is some concerns regarding collection of money owed by other service departments, other departments as well. And if we get into fruitless and wasteful expenditure, from a fruitless and wasteful expenditure perspective, I don't think we really have significant concerns in the sense that whatever was identified and reflected in the financial statements was identified by management, so their processes to identify fruitless and wasteful expenditure were effective, and our audit didn't identify any additional fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And the significant fruitless and wasteful expenditure still relates to a case that was, there was a, what's their prosecution order issued in 2011 and disclosed to rate fees being incurred on that particular matter, and that's the largest contributor to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Also from a fruitless and wasteful expenditure perspective, where there was instances of fruitless and wasteful expenditure identified, the investigation into them have taken place in those respective environments. I think our concern though is from a irregular expenditure perspective. Specifically in the Department of Justice, you'll note that there is 563 million rand identified in the current year. And in addition to that, there's a further 867 million that's unconfirmed in terms of fruitless and waste, in terms of irregular expenditure that is under investigation and is likely to be recognized in future periods. When we look at the nature of the irregular expenditure, one thing maybe positive to note is that when we test the quotations or the bids that were issued by the department in the year under review, we didn't have really significant issues in terms of compliance from that perspective. You'll note that of that 563 million, only 19 million relates to contracts that were entered into in the 1920 year. Most of the irregular expenditure relates to contracts that were entered into in previous years. And if you break down the 560 odd million, you'll see a big chunk of it, 256 million, relates to the security contracts, the for guarding services. That also is from the 2016 contract. And then from our perspective, one really concerning aspect, and it's quite frequent, unfortunately, in the department is extension of contracts. And in most instances, the reason for extending the contract is the procurement process hasn't yet been completed, and additional time is required. And it does in some instances reflect on the planning processes. In other instances, it's because the department wants to go through the necessary quality assurance processes to make sure that they award properly and appropriately. But the big element there is that in these instances, they are required to go to National Treasury to get approval for these extensions, and they haven't always gone to National Treasury. Then in your regular under investigation, you still have 560 million related to the guiding services. There are under investigations where it's alleged that two of the suppliers may have supplied fraudulently obtained certificates. Included in there is also amounts relating to the state attorney's offices, but only in terms of the amounts for justice's own legal fees where non-compliance has taken place. And there's also elements in that amount under investigation relating to extension of contracts above the 15%. You'll notice that when we look at whether the instances of irregular expenditure have been investigated at Legal Aid, at SIU, and at Justice, they have been investigated. At Human Rights Commission, they hadn't been investigated last year, and that was the non-compliance that we reflected on. Just in terms of the Department of Justice, you'll notice that the irregular expenditure balance is still increasing. So as much as the investigations are taking place, they also need to be concluded with the required urgency so that that balance can be addressed, and whether in the disciplinary processes as well, as much as they are ongoing, they also need to be done with the necessary urgency in order to address those balances. Then in terms of the other entities, you'll see similar to the department, extension of contracts above 15% that were not approved by Treasury, that's in the legal aid environment. And then particularly in the Human Rights Commission environment, I spoke about document management earlier in terms of procurement and contract management. There were instances in the Human Rights Commission, I think four or five instances where the commission deviated from obtaining the necessary quotations. The deviations were signed by the accounting officer, and on paper they may even have appeared to be justifiable. But the concern that we've had in the Human Rights Commission environment is that where you have a deviation, you don't have the supporting documentation for that particular deviation. So it would be an instance like there was no one else in the market that was able to provide the services that we required, and therefore we continue with the current service provider. But when we ask for, okay, how did you go and then test the market? What was your criteria that you tested them against? Those are the things that the Human Rights Commission, unfortunately, weren't able to provide for audit. So like I said, ultimately those deviations may well be justifiable, but the audit trail to support them isn't there, and that limitation is what resulted in the non-compliance being reported there. In terms of procurement and contract management, the state attorney environment is something that we've had issues with over the past number of years. In that environment, there was no tender process being adhered to, no quotation process being implemented, and then National Treasury provided them with a deviation, basically, that they don't need to go through a tender process for legal and related services. But what is required is a quotation process, and if it is an urgent matter, then even the quotation process is not required. What we found in the environment, obviously, before that deviation, there was no tender process being implemented, and that was one of the non-compliances. Subsequent to the deviation, also, it wasn't always that three quotations were obtained. In addition to this, the other processes for which they don't have any sort of exemption, being obtaining of your declaration of interest, ensuring that your suppliers are on CSD, ensuring that the tax matters of those suppliers are in order. Those processes are also not in place, and those are some of the non-compliance that we've also reported, but specific to the state and environment, whereas in the normal procurement process of the department, those processes are there. Okay, and then this is just an overall reflection, again, just showing the five audit years that were able to maintain the clean audit status. The Human Rights Commission, in addition to those that provided quality financial statements, concerns in the environment for human rights as well as justice in terms of compliance with laws and regulations as well as performance information reporting, and then the 570 million during irregular expenditure, and just to take note, there is an additional 800 million that is under investigation in that environment. So when we come to the root causes, I think I've touched on it a lot, saying that there is post-audit action plans that are drawn up that are monitored to some extent at the different by the different stakeholders, but they need to be timeously implemented. For instance, if I look at the contingent liability question, supposed to have been done of the 2019 year, December 2019, and then provided to internal audit and external audit to have a look at those registers in January 2020, and ultimately those registers were only provided for audit in July with the financial statement. So just making sure that where we have plans, that we stick to the plans, stick to the timelines, we allocate properly in terms of responsibility, and that. That is similarly in Human Rights Commission. Deviations were an issue in the previous year. Again, performance information as well, similar findings in previous year in last year. Maybe not exactly the same, but yeah, quite similar in nature. And then instability in vacancies has also been identified as a root cause in terms of the department. Including the position of the accounting officer and quite a number of senior managers either having vacant positions or instability due to suspensions. So that's also been a significant contributor to the repeat findings. I think from an overall perspective then, I think the significant recommendation is exactly in line with those root causes and in terms of just the detail with which the action plans are monitored, and that's something that we know that the portfolio committee has been monitoring, and we just request that they continue to monitor them. And then the other significant challenges in terms of the independence of the NPA that still remains a stumbling block in terms of achieving clean administration. I don't think there's anything specific I'd like to highlight in terms of overall message. I think we've gone through the presentation. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Office of the Auditor General. Can I note that members would like to comment about questions? Can you click off the slide? Let me note members who want, I have Honorable Horn, I have Honorable Swart, I have Honorable Mpokeng, in that order, I have Honorable Ndlozi, I have Honorable Breitenbach, those are the hands we have for now. Honorable Horn.
Thank you, Chair, and yeah, thank you to the Auditor General for the presentation. Obviously, they play a very important role in monitoring and ensuring, trying to ensure sound financial and organizational management of our department. So we thank them for playing that role. Having said that, Chair, last year when the Auditor General briefed us, there was a general excitement about the amendments to the Public Audit Act, which would going forward allow for the Auditor General to react to failures to properly ensure consequence management, as it is called in their language, by either referring such matters to law enforcement agencies for investigation, or by issuing what is called a certificate of debt against the accounting authority to enforce paying back irregular spend if it's not properly investigated or if consequence management has not been effected. So I was hoping to hear in this presentation today a bit about whether that has happened, whether the AG has embarked on that road already in instances where there has not been investigation at all. We've noted here that they say that the Human Rights Commission has failed to investigate all instances. But then while I am on the subject, Chair, it is also so that, and I'm saying this with respect to the Auditor General, that one gets a sense that the bar for them to be satisfied that there's not to be a qualification on the basis of a lack of investigation seems not to be that high. In respect of the Department of Justice, for example, Justice in their presentation to us, which was circulated beforehand, really admits that in terms of the security guarding services, which the AG has referred to, and the appointment of legal services, which is the two major contributors to the irregular expenditure amounts of the Department of Justice, according to Justice itself, no consequence management in respect of those two contracts have been implemented. The AG says to us they satisfied that some sort of an investigation is ongoing, but in the same vein, we know that specifically the security guarding services issue stems from as far back as 2016. We also know as members of the portfolio committee that this issue lies at the heart of the suspension, still with full pay without a hearing, as far as we know, of the CFO. So I want, with your permission, Chair, to ask the Auditor General to possibly unpack these issues a bit further, and to also inform the Portfolio Committee as to what extent do they in here monitor the progress made by the department and its entities with these investigations. And then my other question relates to the comment made by the Auditor General to the extent that they request the Portfolio Committee to keep on monitoring the implementation of audit action plans from the department side. And I want to say that I think our frustration as a portfolio committee is that whenever we are briefed by departments and entities on these, we get a broad assurance that the audit action plan is being attended to, possibly in that specific quarter there's not been much progress, but we will see a lot of progress in the immediate future. That's more or less always the tale that's been presented to us. But then if one looks on a broad level at the presentation of the AG, there is, as they have really called it, a major stagnation in respect of these issues. So I want to know from the Auditor General to what extent are they still engaging on a monthly or quarterly basis with the department and the entities on these issues, and whether they would be in a position to possibly join the department when the department comes and report on the implementation of audit action plans to the portfolio committee going forward, so that one could get also a type of an objective assessment along with what the department present in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. And I also just want to again express our deepest condolences to the AG on the passing, to the office on the passing of Mr. Temo Kwetu from our perspective. Chair, thank you to the AG for again exceptional work, and just alluding to what Mr. Horn said on their slides to on recommendations, and I think this will be very important for us to follow up. But the recommendations to the department and its entities that there should be required urgency by management in responding to our messages about addressing risks identified and improving internal controls. Chair, that seems to be a deficiency there. They obviously, according to that, that means that there isn't the necessary urgency, and this is an issue we would need to raise with the department and the entities that according to that is not the required urgency. Then of course the second issue which is of great concern is the internal audits of the department and the entities, and that this, the AG says, should be assigned responsibility for tracking and verifying progress. This is another issue we will need to follow up. The issue related to the portfolio committee that we should request the accounting officer and the minister to provide feedback on implementation. I would suggest that we need to meet with the AG possibly more regularly, maybe on a quarterly basis, so that we can also monitor compliance and get the feedback from the AG's office. They play a very important role in assisting us with our oversight function. It's almost like the budget office of Parliament that helps with the national budget. I think this is very important. Chair, I'd like maybe the AG to specifically, the issues that they've highlighted on governance challenges between the department and the NPA, if they'd unpack this further, because they say it remains a stumbling block in achieving clean administration. And I think that is an issue that I'd like them just to unpack a little bit more. We understand that, but clearly when the department and the NPA come, there was talk of some legislative amendments in that regard as well. The issue relating to the outcomes being stagnant over the past three financial years with the qualification is a matter, or although it is not a deterioration, I would like to see an improvement and not a stagnation. And the AG's office says this status will not change until the different role players work together and ensure that information relating to ongoing litigation is regularly updated and reviewed. That's a key aspect. And Chair, that is the role of the State Attorney. And the second issue there relates to the 2.4 billion rand legal fees that the AG indicated is not being collected from client department. Chair, this is a matter for us. This is a massive red flag. How can the department afford 2.4 billion rand on its books that they're not collecting, and it's an increase of 400 million over the last financial year? So that is an increase, and that is money owed to the department. There's 421 million owed to the SIU by client department. Now we know with the budgets being cut that those departments are going to be even in a more difficult situation to pay the Justice Department that, but we need to find out ways from the AG and from the department how we're going to address that issue. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mkuke.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation from the AG. Chair, I want to check on the South African Human Rights Commission on the credible performance reporting. They are saying lack of sufficient evidence could not be provided to support their achievements. I want to check if there were any recommendations how to be doing it better, because I thought I was going to see somewhere where you are having a note, like on the recommendations of the department, to say this is how you can do it better. And then on the issue of the investigations, which Honorable Horn touched on, I want to know on the 181 million worth of assets were not verified, but they are saying that the investigations in these assets are ongoing. But I don't get a sense of the time frame of this investigation to say that by this time we expect them to be coming back to us.
and it also goes to the previous year irregular expenditure reported for investigations also, and there are no time frames because we'll come back the other time to say investigations are on. That is something they can clarify on how do they work on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Ndlozi.
Thanks, Chair Jefferson. I have really indeed been largely covered by Honorable Horn in relation to this matter of implications following the amendment of the amendments that were made last year to give some teeth to the Office of the Auditor General. And also to emphasize, secondly, that don't they ask the question of the investigation outcomes in relation to irregular expenditure that was identified before, because they're saying that there is investigation and they leave it at that. Where is that investigation? Has money been recovered? Has there been implications on individuals? It seems to me that we would need some detail in relation to that. And I think that it's precisely to get away from this culture of simply saying there's something wrong, but there is no implications to the people who have been found to be doing wrong things. And then I'm wondering, I mean, and this really would be, some of the objectives set by the department have to do with transformation. Does the audit inquire, for an example, on the usage of service providers in relation to Black people, in relation to women? Isn't that an important audit inquiry? If the departments across the government, in fact, have set themselves these transformation objectives on one hand, and on the other, the usage as much as possible, the purchase of locally produced goods, and so on and so forth. Is this an audit inquiry? Do you ask these questions or not? And if you do, what do you find? Are these objectives reflecting, and do they become part of your inquiry, or is it something that you don't look at all? And if you could explain why is it not important if you do not look at it. And then finally, of course, I'm also interested in some deliberation or some explanation as to these impediments of governance problems, of governance between NPA and the department that cause audit problems. If you could give us meat so that we are able to go to these two entities or institutions and sort of inquire and do our oversight responsibility. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Gravenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to repeat the condolences of the Honorable Swash to the Office of the Auditor General, a great loss. And I have, as far as questions go, I've been covered by the Honorable Horn and Honorable Swash. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Over to you, the Office of the Auditor General.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we definitely appreciate the condolences, and this is indeed very sad, and it's a great loss to our country. If I start with the implementation of the amendments to the Public Audit Act, the manner in which the office has implemented the implementation of those amendments has been in a phased approach. You'll recall in 2018-19 cycle, we implemented it at, I think it's, if I'm not mistaken, 16 auditees. And then for the 19-20 cycle, we've selected 89 auditees in which we're implementing the amendments. So we, at the start of each cycle, we go through a risk assessment process and we look at which auditees we have the capacity and the skills in which to audit or implement the amendments. We also look at the nature of the findings in that environment and the risk in terms of those environments, and we then make a selection in terms of the particular audits in which we will implement the amendments. So having looked at the audit outcomes of the department, especially for the current year, when we go into the assessment again for the 2021 year, which will happen now in terms of the implementation, these concerns in terms of the escalating irregular expenditure and the consequence management processes and the long time frame in terms of doing the investigations and whatnot will be considered in terms of that particular assessment. And then once we have done that assessment, I will come back to the portfolio committee and just alert the portfolio committee in terms of whether the department has indeed been selected from an implementation perspective. So like I said, it is being rolled in, and we do a risk assessment. And for the 1920 year, we looked at also other risk areas in terms of the service delivery, in terms of the tangible delivery, service delivery, where we can easily identify the financial loss in terms of your human settlements and your other infrastructure departments, which was prioritized. But like I said, moving forward, it will be rolled out to more entities as we develop our capacity and our skills in terms of implementing it. And it's very likely that in the very near future that it will be implemented at the department itself. Then in terms of the guiding services and the irregular expenditure emanating from there, look, the accounting officer did the previous accounting officer did institute that investigation into all security contracts dating back from 2008 until I think it was 2018-19. And to date, I know that two reports were issued to the department, one in terms of the guiding services themselves. And the results of that particular report did result in disciplinary processes being instituted against senior officials in the department. When the audit concluded, those particular disciplinary procedures were still ongoing, and I think maybe it's best that the committee engage with the DG in terms of the current progress in terms of those disciplinary proceedings. Just in terms of our role in terms of in-year monitoring, we have a couple of mechanisms that we utilize to follow up on significant deficiencies that we've identified in previous years. We utilize a tool of a status of records review, which we normally do towards the end of the calendar year in the third quarter of the financial year. Then we also have our interim audit, which basically we report our management report or our interim management report. And in that report, we try to focus on the key deficiencies also that were identified in the previous year. And that report we normally issue around the end of February and beginning of March of each year. And we are very much willing and available to come and engage when the department comes on those reports, obviously. If the portfolio committee requires that, definitely. I think from a overall reaction to risks and misstatements that we identified, and why we say in some instances it's not done with the required urgency, is it's the way that the post audit action plan is structured. It's exactly that, a post audit action plan. But like you've just heard that we do interim audits, we do internal audit does their work throughout the year and whatnot. We would do an interim audit. We'd make findings, for instance, let's say in January or February, we'd report them in our interim management report, or even just in communication of findings to management. But management will wait until the end of the audit process, and in this case it was September, normally it would be July, and then put together a post-audit action plan in terms of trying to address those findings, and that might be 6 months after the finding has been raised and agreed to by management. So that's why I think the timing of that plan, it needs to be a live document. It needs to be something that management, as soon as they agree to a finding, have agreed to the recommendations, put in place their own plans in terms of of addressing that particular deficiency, it goes onto that live document and gets tracked at all the different levels. I think from a reporting perspective to the portfolio committee, I think as much as we do go in there, like I said, early in the year and for periods of the year, I think internal audit can play that role in terms of validating the progress, so that once the department comes and presents their progress against the plan, you have an independent assurance provider being internal audited, has validated those actions that management said they have done, so that you do have some level of assurance that progress has actually been validated. Then, similarly, I think with internal audit, especially in the Human Rights Commission, they did have capacity issues in the period under review. But for instance, things like having sufficient audit evidence or for the performance information, that is something that the review reports or the processes would have identified submitting it to us. So that role of internal audit, especially in terms of reviewing those significant weaknesses, being supporting evidence or processes, and then also in your procurement environment, reviewing the compliance of the procurement processes with the updated legislation, especially when there's changes in legislation. Because you note that I said in the Procurement Environment Act, Human Rights Commission, there was instances where declarations of interest weren't being submitted. And that was purely a misunderstanding of the role that the National Treasury plays in terms of the Central Supply Database, and they relied on the Central Supply Database for those declarations, whereas hopefully if internal audit had done a review, they would have noted that National Treasury has said that you can't place reliance on the CSD for that purpose, and hopefully it would have been rectified before we identified it in the post year-end audit. So that's also, like I said, a role that internal audit can improve on in terms of quarterly reporting or in terms of processes at the Human Rights Commission. In terms of governance challenges, in previous discussions I had with the accounting officer at the Department of Justice, it was a case of the reporting lines and implementing the necessary remedial action or consequence management, given that the accounting officer is responsible for the ultimate set of financial statements, but there's obviously the head of the NPA also responsible, and those reporting lines and the ability for the accounting officer to take the necessary action as it affects the whole set of financial statements. Additionally, also your NPA doesn't always then get the necessary attention it deserves in terms of the different oversight bodies, in the sense that it's then grouped with the department, and you can't then and sometimes it doesn't get the necessary focus it deserves in terms of their own issues, in terms of whether it be compliance or any other matter when it's grouped with the department. Okay, then just in terms of the specifics, in terms of the limitations with regard to performance information reporting at the Human Rights Commission. So I think with the Human Rights Commission, in terms of the limitations, what they really need to do is upfront, they need to, when they plan in terms of what the supporting documentation is, like in this instance I said it was attendance registers and calendar invites and the like, they need to identify who are the role players that will have that particular documentation. And in a lot of these instances, it would actually be the commissioners themselves that would go to these engagements and host these engagements and whatnot. So they then need to be in a position to communicate with those particular role players what is their responsibilities in terms of document management, and then put in place processes to collect that information. So, I mean, there would be other administrative duties that they would have to do in terms of organizing those particular events or whatnot, whether it be the catering or whatnot. And then in those documentations, you need to include the submission of these the performance information, substantiating evidence in those processes. So you just basically need to have a proper process of of what is required and who it's required from, and then that needs to be reviewed on a quarterly basis or maybe even half yearly by internal audit to say that those processes are actually being adhered to, and then you can take the necessary actions to address it if it is not the case. Look, in terms of the time frames for the asset management or the asset investigation, I think in this particular instance, I do have a bit of sympathy for the department. Those investigations into the assets that were missing were planned for April and May, and obviously the pandemic did have an impact in terms of those. And as much as it was reflected as 181 million that was outstanding, they had, once the lockdown had been lifted, started their investigations, and they had reduced that 180 million balance. I think at that point it was by about 14 million, and they were continuing with doing those investigations. So I think the asset management environment, or at least the verification process, had been significantly improved from the 2018-19 year. But like I said, there is problems in terms of the daily disciplines of making sure that the asset is where it's supposed to be, because ideally through your verification, your initial verification in the third quarter, you shouldn't have so many assets that you couldn't verify. But they have continued in terms of that particular exercise, and they were addressing it straight away after the lockdown had been lifted. In terms of some of the investigations, the irregular expenditure under investigation that still needs to be confirmed. Some of it, yes, it's due to ongoing investigations that should have that are taking quite lengthy, and there are some really contracts that are under investigation. Some of the irregular expenditure is also of a technical nature that requires some input from National Treasury, and as much as maybe the National Treasury should have happened earlier, when the engagements did happen, National Treasury didn't give clear answers, and those engagements are still continuing. So it is a combination of factors. But yeah, I think when it does go on your irregular expenditure to be confirmed, there should be a time frame set by the department, and it shouldn't necessarily take as long as it's taking now to determine whether that irregular expenditure is actually expenditure or not, and then after that institute the necessary investigations, and if necessary, disciplinary action after that. Then in terms of transformation objectives, in terms of local content specifically, we do audit that particular legislation. We audit against it. We audit to ensure that the local content thresholds are reflected in the request for information, and that the winning suppliers actually meet those requirements. So that particular legislation we do audit against, and we didn't have significant issues. I think when the legislation was initially rolled out a few years ago, we did have some teething issues, but in the current year, we didn't have any real concerns relating to local content. In terms of transformation objectives relating to women, look, from a performance information perspective, like I said, normally we would have looked at all of the performance information programs. This year we looked at the state legal services, and in the state legal services they do have information relating or targets relating to the value of briefs issued to female advocates, and as well as the percentage of briefs awarded to female advocates, and also to previously disadvantaged individuals as well. And we audited the information, and the information that they presented in their performance reports were considered to be credible in terms of the reliability they owe. And they are included in program 3 in the performance information reporting there. Chair, I think I've gone through the question, but I'm going to just maybe go back and reflect on some of them if I've missed anything. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This seems to be a follow-up question from Honorable Jose.
Thanks, Chairperson. No, I think we shouldn't brush over this question of transformation in relation to Black people as well as women. This is a very important matter in the transformation of the legal fraternity that the department has to set a big example on in terms of its legal brief. So it has to be highlighted, it seems to me, in the report in detail. So you can't just say, no, we did look at it. You looked at it, and what did it say? What are the percentages? It has to be reported. It has to be something that is consistently flagged so that it is openly monitored as to, are you giving briefs to women? Are you giving briefs to black lawyers, to black attorneys, and so on and so forth? What are the percentages? We are supposed to track that down. And then the procurement policy is the products that the department and the entities are securing. Are they locally produced? What are the percentages? We are supposed to check that. These are very important things. We don't just say, no, there were no problems. I think they deserve a specific mention, you know, in proper detail. It's not even a huge, like 5 pages or 10 pages. It's like a graph, your pies and all those things that you keep doing on other performance indicators. I think it's important that we get that. And so if you do have it, please tell us. If not, I think that Chairperson, through you, it should really reach us. What are your audit outcomes in relation to those two questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nivo Drachen.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you for the AG report. So my first question has already been covered, but I do want to ask secondly, with regards to irregular expenditure. At the bottom of the slide, it said remaining transaction. But it says remaining transactions, and then goes on to say, interpreter clarification. It says remaining transactions, and then it goes further to say nothing is approved. Yeah, nothing was approved. And the objectives were not achieved. So in those cases, what happens? How does the AG provide support to the entities or the department? Do you advise on how the department should you know, take this forward and, you know, rectify the situation in that particular case? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can you respond to the two questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know if I missed the second question in terms of what is required of us there. If it can perhaps be repeated, but I can maybe just go back to the first question, and then we can maybe just get clarity on the second question. Just in terms of the performance of the department in terms of a woman and previously disadvantaged advocate, I think it's included from the department side on page 77 of the annual performance report. Just in terms of percentage of briefs that were awarded to women, it's 41% for the 2019-20 year. For the percentage of briefs awarded to previously disadvantaged individuals, it's 83%. And then in terms of rand value from a percentage awarded to women, it's 28% in the current year. So from a auditing perspective, we don't normally comment in terms of the achievement themselves. We more give credibility to what the department is reporting. So if the department reported, like in this instance, let's say 41% of briefs being given to a woman, we would go and ensure that is actually accurate in terms of going and looking at the total briefs that were allocated and the briefs that were allocated to women, and whether that percentage is correctly calculated, and where the department says it's been allocated to a woman, it actually has been allocated to a woman. So we give credibility to the information that the department actually includes in the performance report. And like I said, that performance information is included on page 77 of the report. From a local content perspective, the local content regulations require certain level of local content in different types of goods, being all various types of goods, and all of the thresholds that are applicable are there in the applicable legislation. So what we go ahead and test is if the legislation says for a chair or a leather chair or whatever it might be, you require 100% local content. We go and test whether in your request for quotations, you actually told the suppliers that we require 100% local content. And then when you get a winning supplier, that winning supplier does in fact adhere to that threshold that was populated in your request for quotation. And then in that instance, we test the department's compliance with that particular regulation. And where we've tested the adherence to that legislation, in those instances, we haven't had instances where they have not been compliant. So they have asked for the required local content, and they've obtained the required local content. Thank you, Chair. I'm sorry about the second question. If it can please be repeated.
Honorable Nivot Rahan, can you repeat your question?
So it's referring to slide 19. I'm referring to slide 19. In terms of irregular expenditure, there's a block on the slide that says further 867 million not confirmed or hasn't been confirmed. And now at the bottom of that slide, it says already or remaining transactions. Primary related. Sorry, the interpreter is quoting without the document at hand. So please bear with that. And then approval for extension or not approval for extension not approved. So National Treasury did not approve that or the deviation. So I would like to understand why the approval was not received or not sourced from National Treasury. And then in that case, you know, if why it was not sought and what can be advised, how the department can, you know, should go about doing that. So I just like clarity in that sense. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you so much, Chair. Okay, so in these instances where they've gone to or they haven't gone to National Treasury, it's a case of basically where they've had contracts for a specific period, maybe 2 years or so, for a specific service. And then because the procurement processes had not been finalized in time, those particular contracts were extended beyond the two-year period. And the interpretation of the auditors was that if they were to extend that particular contract above the two-year period, they needed to get Treasury approval because it would constitute a new procurement. The department, however, had a different view in terms of that. They were of the view that they didn't need to go to National Treasury because it was within those 15% thresholds, and therefore that matter was then taken to Treasury because there was a disagreement between ourselves and the department. The department was of the view that the adjudication committee could approve those particular extensions. And then that matter was indeed taken to National Treasury. However, National Treasury hasn't yet given a verdict or guidance in terms of whether the department was within its own delegations of approval or not. However, the recommendation that we've given to the department in any case is in these instances to go to National Treasury in any event right up front, because if there's any gray room, you might as well get the approval from National Treasury. The likelihood is that National Treasury will give the outcome in the coming weeks, and then either it would be irregular expenditure or not, but then they will be clearly on the matter. I personally believe that Treasury would, even if they say that particular expenditure is not irregular, require them in future to go to Treasury, because other departments have gone to Treasury for similar instances in the past. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Now, I had met with the Office of the Auditor General yesterday, and on behalf of the committee, I did pass our condolences on the death of the Auditor General and the role that he has played, especially in improving relations between the Office of the Auditor General and Parliament. He has been really a gallant fighter for good financial governance. He will be greatly missed. I think I'll be speaking on behalf of all of us when I say he has fought a good fight, and we are deeply saddened by his sudden departure. What I can say to the Office of the Auditor General is that our assessment of the department, in fact, both departments, Justice and Correctional Services, is that we are dealing with departments that are in crisis. And I think the approach of the Auditor General should be as such. And the questions raised by members about the implementation of the Act that is giving you much more powers, we are really pleading that that should be prioritized when it comes to both the Department of Justice and the Department of Correctional Services. For instance, with regard to the State Attorney's Office, we all know, and you do know, that that office is under investigation by the SIU for serious corruption issues between the Office of the State Attorney's and some of the legal practitioners in the country. Some in Gauteng, some in the Eastern Cape, and the issues that you have highlighted that relate to the Department of Health with regard to medical malpractice, those are issues that are also under investigations. And I think it would be important that there is greater collaboration between yourself and other state agencies like the SIU in getting much more information, because what might appear as a deletion of one zero or an addition of another zero might not just be an accounting irregularity. It might be as a result of a serious criminal activity that might have been taking place. That hence, there is that particular investigation in the Office of the State Attorney. I'm happy that the acting Solicitor General is also part of the meeting. We would like to have, I think when we come back next year, we would like to have a more interactive kind of an engagement where the Office of the Auditor General is present, the departments and the entities concerned are present, and we have a conversation. Because now the way we have structured it, you are presenting, I think they'll be presenting sometime this week or next week, but I think it's important that we need to have a conversation that will also include the National Treasury. Because as members of this portfolio committee, we are deeply concerned about the performance of the department. There is clear correlation between their qualification, their audit qualification, and their underperformance. Honorable Nivot Rehans is talking about 800 million that is under investigation with regard to irregular expenditure, but we also have 764 million rands of under expenditure. So you, in addition to that, you are dealing with a department that has been in decline in terms of performance. In the last financial year, it was at 61%. The year before that, it was at 74%. So in the last financial year, it was at 61%. The fourth quarter, it was at the last, yeah, the fourth quarter, it was at 51%. The first quarter of this year, it was at 45%. So it's a department that needs urgent attention. And we do think that this law should be, the department should be prioritized. Because we cannot only be dealing with consequence management as it only relates to corruption. We also have to deal with consequence management, and maybe the acting DG is here. We also have to deal with consequence management as it relates to underperformance, because the taxpayers are paying you to perform at a particular level. Continuous underperformance is directly robbing the people of South Africa what they are entitled to, which is service. The office of the not the state attorney, the other office, I just forgot the name. It is in a state of this disarray. So it would be really important that we don't treat it as a department that is just a normal department, normal performance. It's not. That is why we have invited the minister to come on Friday in the afternoon to can have a conversation with him about the performance of the department, because we are deeply concerned about, really deeply concerned about this performance. So the issues, for instance, raised with by Honorable Swart of quarterly meetings, I think we should really explore that. But when we have those quarterly meetings, I think we should have more meetings that we have open conversations, and we are not only dealing with a department, but all the stakeholders are involved. Both yourselves, the National Treasury, are also involved. We started the process of inviting the chairpersons of internal audit to be part of our meetings and to give their reports. But it's quite clear, if you listen to the report that you have just given, as it relates to the South African Human Rights Commission, even the department, we think that the internal audit committee, they will have a lot to answer for. I think in our next engagement, I think they will have a lot to answer for, because most of the issues that you are raising are not new issues, they are recurring issues. And we can't be in a game where we treat lack of service delivery issues as a ritual, as a routine, with predictable answers that no, this is under control, we are dealing with it, the next audit outcome would improve, and nothing happens and nothing improves. We can't accept it. It can't be acceptable. I'm talking to you, acting DG. The fact that you would have a CFO and quite a number of people in the finance unit being under suspension for a prolonged period of time, and those disciplinary hearings are not coming to an end, it's not good at all. Your high vacancy rate of 23% among senior managers, it's the results is what we are hearing today from the Auditor General. There is a clear correlation between that and the results that we are getting. So I think it's important that we have to change gear. We have to focus on timeframes. We have to hold one another in terms of those timeframes. We can't be like in a United Nations meetings where we will discuss one thing for 30 years. It can't happen. We have to ensure that things that we promise that are going to change, they change immediately. I've already talked to the issue of the consequence management, the issue of the Solicitor General. I think it's important that Solicitor General, when we start the year next year, you have had quite a few months now. You have had some few months in office, and would like to start discussing with you and hearing from you what are your interventions. Because the question raised by Honorable Ndlozi, we experience a problem that the department would give us all the statistics which at face value, you can see, you know, they are doing pretty well. But the response and the outcry that we get there from Black legal practitioners who say that they're not getting briefs, from women practitioners that they say that they're not getting briefs, from people with disability that they're not getting briefs. I mean, the fact that we have only had since democracy one judge in the Constitutional Court who represent people with disability, I mean, it's something of concern. And you would not be able to produce these judges who are women, who are people with disability, who are Black, unless those people are in court, they're getting briefed, they're in court every day to hone their skills. So there is always a vast difference between what is reported in the audit report, in fact, even in the annual report, and the outcry that we are getting about issues of briefing patterns. And that should always be part of our rigorous oversight as this committee on that particular score, because if you fail to transform the legal profession, you will fail to transform the judiciary. If you fail to transform the judiciary, you won't be able to transform society. So I do think that we should really be treating this department with that eye, even as the office of the Auditor General. I think it should be prioritized as one of the departments that need to be the act that has been passed. I think it should be one of those departments that we should start here with it. So the office that I was talking about is the Master's Office. That office is in a state of a mess. And I think since we are at level one, I think you should really be considering to seriously audit that committee, that office. We are very concerned about the performance of that office and the fact that it serves the most vulnerable in our society. And they're not getting service, they're not getting good service from that office. So let's work together. Let's ensure that we have these regular meetings, which I will be more interactive, so that people can be accountable. The aim of this is not question and answer. The aim of this engagement is about improved service delivery for our people. I hope we will work together to ensure that these two departments and entities are really changing. I mean, we do note that there are entities within the department that we can say are star performers, your Legal Aid South Africa, your SIU and others that consistently are showing good results. But the departments themselves, they leave much to be desired, and we should really focus on them. Thank you very much, honorable members. You said that there's also a second presentation that you'd want to make.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Before we move on to the next one, I just want to quickly say that we definitely note the concerns in terms of the implementation of the PAA, and we will definitely take these concerns in terms of our risk assessment when we select the new for the 2021 year. And just to note that correctional services has in fact been selected in the past 2 years as well. And we will definitely, from a collaboration perspective, look forward to the meetings with the committee and other role players. And in terms of collaboration with the SIU, we do normally, as part of our risk assessment, also have engagements with them to try and identify what the concerns are from their perspective and also incorporate if there's any elements that we can assist with through the audit process as well. So we will continue doing that. Thank you so much, Chairperson. Chairperson, the next presentation will be done by my colleague, Tendani. It will be on the Office of the Chief Justice as well as Public Protector. I think we'll go through the two of them individually. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Like my colleague indicated, I will be presenting on audit outcomes of the Office of the Chief Justice and also the Office of the Public Protector. So I've just projected the slides on Office of the Chief Justice. Chair and Honorable Members, can you see the slides?
Yes, we can see them.
All right. Okay, thank you. All right, so I'll just take, so Chair, before I go on, my presentation will be very brief because it's just the two audits. Can I continue after the OCJ slides to the PPSA slides, or should I pause for questions first?
You said that you'll be very brief. Maybe you can just combine
yes.
them.
Okay, thank you. All right. So I'll start with the Office of the Chief Justice. My colleague has already covered the introductory slide, so I'll just rush through straight to the audit outcomes. So just the audit outcomes of the Office of the Chief Justice. As you are aware, Chair, they started, I think, independently reporting from the 2015-16 financial year. So these are their audit outcomes for the past 5 years. For the first 2 years, they had, you know, findings on predetermined objectives, as you see the yellow. However, from 2017-18, they have been consistently been producing clean audit outcomes. So even in the current financial year, they also, in 2019, they also reported a clean audit outcome. So yeah, I would think this is basically due to their review processes of the financial statements and also the strong internal control environment that they've maintained. They are also monitoring compliance with applicable laws and regulations. If I then move on, this slide just talks back to the audit outcome that I've just presented, so I'll just move from this slide. So this one is just talking through the credible financial reporting to indicate that we didn't identify any material misstatements in the financial statements which were submitted for audits. In terms of performance reporting, we audited on one program, which is Superior Court Services. We also did not identify any material findings on the performance reporting. If we move on to compliance with legislation, we've also audited compliance with legislation. Also, we didn't identify any material findings in that regard. So in terms of status of internal control drivers, so as you can see, I've listed two as yellow, which is one on is on daily and monthly controls. So this is the, I've indicated, they are clean, they've received clean audit outcome. However, there are, you know, minor issues that still need to be resolved in terms of financial statements. There were misstatements there on the financial statements. However, these misstatements were not material. And also in terms of your compliance with legislation, we did identify minor findings which were not material. Some of these findings would be to say when you have procured, when you have procured from local content, you need to report to, you need to inform the DTI. So we will find that that is not performed, but it doesn't really lead to irregular expenditure. So there were minor findings also on compliance. Hence, I've assessed them as a yellow to say, you know, it didn't affect your audit report. However, still pay attention to this minor glitches to ensure that, you know, you don't, they don't materialize and then they affect your audit report. So if we then move on to assurance provided, so I have assessed as senior management as provide some assurance, basically because, you know, there are some findings which needs to be addressed. So I mean they still need to strengthen their internal control environment. Then if we can move on to the financial health and financial management, as you can see, it's green. Basically, in terms of expenditure management, they are paying their creditors within 30 days. So when we perform the ratio, their average days, their average creditor payment days is 11 days, which is well below the industry norm of 30 days. So in terms of asset and liability management, their assets do exceed their liabilities, so they can pay their debts in the short term. In terms of cash management, also they had a surplus in the current financial year. So hence you see it's all green. So I don't have any uncertainties relating to their going concern principle. So if we move on to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, so the department is also performing very well, because in the previous year, they didn't report any fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And also in the current year, they didn't incur any fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And if we move on to irregular expenditure, also here they've shown an improvement. In the previous year, they had irregular expenditure of 679,000. This has been investigated and has been submitted to National Treasury for them to request a condemnation of this irregular expenditure. In the current financial year, they didn't incur any new irregular expenditure. So yeah, there has been an improvement in this regard. So this is just, it talks back to the irregular expenditure. So there were no findings on the supply chain management, which would then amount to irregular expenditure. Then this is just a snapshot. It's indicating that they didn't have any findings on financial statements, no findings on performance report, and also on compliance with legislation. And also I just indicated the irregular expenditure. if we can then move on to, this is just, normally here we would say, we would indicate the root causes, so, but here I've indicated the best practices that they should maintain because they are obtaining a green audit outcome. So this is just what they should maintain. So the internal controls, they must continuously strengthen their internal control environment. In terms of stability in positions, they must just ensure that they do maintain the stability in their key management positions. Then tone at the top, just to ensure that they are responsive to audit findings. They also, in terms of consequence management procedures, but I mean, this is being implemented. As you can see, they investigate their irregular expenditure and it has been submitted to National Treasury to request for condonement. So just a recommendation to the department is what I've been saying throughout, to say they still need to continuously strengthen their internal control environment, just to ensure that, you know, those misstatements that we've identified, although they were immaterial, that they don't reoccur. And also, we also had some finding, it was although minor, it was just on ICT policies and procedures, wherein we identified some policies and procedures which were not yet approved. So just to recommend to them that they should be need to ensure that they are approved, and also they need to ensure that there is stability in key management position within the ICT unit. So to the portfolio committee, I'm just recommending that, I mean, there isn't really anything alarming at the department, but the portfolio committee can just request regular feedback on the implementation of the audit action plans. As you know, we did identify findings just to ensure that they are attending to the findings which were identified by the auditors, although immaterial. So that's, and then in terms of my overall message, like I've indicated at the audit of the OCJ, there isn't really anything alarming. So we do commend the OCJ on obtaining clean audit outcomes for the third consecutive year. So that is it on the Office of the Chief Justice. So I'll just then move on to the public protector slides. I'll just share them now. Oh. Stop share, then share the new ones. Okay, so let me just do the slideshow. So I'll just again move to the part where we have the audit outcomes because we've covered all these other slides. So this is for the public protector. Chair and honorable members, as you can see, for the past 4 years, it's been orange, and in 2019-20, it's green. So this basically means that there has been an improvement in the audit outcomes. The public protector for the first year in their 25 years of existence has obtained a clean audit outcome in the 2019-20 financial year. So they have improved. This is very commendable. And I think what led to the improvement, Chair and honorable members, it's basically the stability within their finance function contributed to the improvement. They also improved their daily and monthly processing controls. They are also reporting controls way in the review of financial statements. The controls around the review of financial statements were strengthened. And if you remember last year, they also had a finding on not paying suppliers within 30 days. That has also been addressed. They've actually implemented a tool wherein they monitor payments to the suppliers and they continuously monitor that control. So we didn't identify any findings in that regard in the current financial year. Then I've indicated the stability. Then yeah, also the monitoring of compliance with laws and applicable legislation. When I move on to my slides, you would see that they've been monitoring their compliance to legislation, and you would see the reduction in irregular expenditure, which is a direct result of them monitoring compliance with legislation. So if we can then just move to the credible financial reporting, this is where I just indicate that I didn't identify any material findings in the financial statements. In the previous year, there were material findings that we reported we reported in our audit report this in the current year there has been an improvement, and you see the green up there improving. Then in terms of performance reporting, also in the current year I didn't identify any material findings on their performance report. In terms of compliance with legislation, like I've indicated in the previous year, we had raised an issue with their payments not made within 30 days. In the current year, we didn't have any material findings on compliance with legislation. Also, we didn't have, and also in terms of irregular expenditure and fruitless expenditure, we didn't have any material non-compliance there with legislation. So then in terms of my status of internal controls, also here, you can see I have two yellows here also on daily and monthly controls. This is basically because, although we didn't identify any material findings, there were some findings that we did identify. I think it was more on your prepayments. So they just need to ensure that for their prepayments, they have a proper register, which would indicate that this is the date that we prepaid our suppliers. So as at year end, we need to record this amount as an expense and this amount as a prepayment. So we did identify minor issues there. There were also minor issues that we identified regarding to the deal with a number of lawyers. So sometimes lawyers wouldn't send them invoices in time. And if that's the case, then it means if they incurred legal services in the current financial year, they will not be accounted for because they don't have an invoice. So they need to strengthen controls in that they need to regularly follow up with their lawyers to ensure that they get invoices in time. So we did identify one or two issues there that needs to be resolved. And I'm saying you are not yet green, you are not yet there, you still need to improve controls within those areas. So then there's also in terms of review and monitor compliance. So we also identified irregular expenditure. You would see when we move on with our slides, it's just that it's not material. They incurred about irregular expenditure of about 200,000. So yeah, this is just to indicate that you still need to monitor compliance with laws and regulations to ensure that you don't incur this irregular expenditure. I understand it's immaterial, but they shouldn't be incurring irregular expenditure. And also, if you take into account their mandate, which is to investigate instances they do investigate instances of irregular expenditure, so they can't be then also incurring irregular expenditure. So they just need to, it's just minor issues that also needs to be attended to and ensure that their SCM controls are strong. So if we then can move on to the next slide, in terms of assurance provided, you would see then that my senior management is a yellow. It's because, they are not yet where I want them to be. They still need to improve on they still need to strengthen their internal control environment. Then if we move on to financial health and financial management, in terms of revenue management, they receive income only from grants, so that we didn't identify any issues. They received their grants. In terms of assets and liability management, their current assets exceed their current liabilities, which says that they can pay their creditors within the short term, and they have been doing that. As you can see, like I've indicated, they paid all their creditors within the 30 days. So in terms of cash management, also they had a positive cash balance as at year end. So you see the financial health is actually green throughout, so they can continue to exist in the future. So if we move on to the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, so in the previous year they reported a fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 2,419. In this year that amount improved to 34,000. So that is also just an issue there that they need to attend to. So, but the breakdown of that 34,000, you would see there were cancellation of trips. So that would normally affect your cancellation of accommodation that you had already booked on the other side, and also your flights. There was one instance of an incorrect order which was issued to service provider. There were also instances wherein tenders were cancelled. So, I mean, you would have, incurred costs in terms of advertising that tender. And then in the end, you cancel the tender. So then you incur those costs. They become a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Then there is also another instance on interest on outstanding payment to DPW, which is about 4,000. So, I mean, what happens there is that, I mean, they lease offices and then they pay DPW the lease costs. So there was just issues that they are still currently discussing with DPW on that invoice. So it's past 30 days and it's incurring that interest. So, I mean, I don't know, if they resolve it, obviously they can negotiate for that interest to be written off. So if you then move on to irregular expenditure, so here we see a very significant improvement. In the previous year, they had reported irregular expenditure of 7.6 million. In the current year, they've only reported irregular expenditure of 200 million. So out of that 200 million, 200,000, not 200 million. Yeah. So 105,000, it represents incidents which occurred. It's new non-compliance which was incurred in the 2019-20 financial year. And then 96,000, it's incidents which were incurred in the previous year. It's wherein you have an ongoing contract. So then if we can look at the nature, it's basically payments to attorneys above the agreed charge out rate. So, I mean, they would enter into an agreement with attorneys and say for a senior lawyer, they will charge, say, 1.5. And then when they actually receive the invoice, they find out, no, the senior lawyer actually charged us 1.6 and not 1.5 per the agreement. And then there was also one incident wherein there was a supplier which was appointed, but their tax affairs were not declared to be in order at the time of the appointment. So those are the incidents of irregular expenditure. If we look at investigation, previously irregular expenditure was fully investigated. They have also submitted this to National Treasury to request condemnation. So they are currently waiting for the National Treasury to attend to the request for that for condemnation of the irregular expenditure. So if we move on, so this I'm just indicating regression in SCM compliance, although the amount is less than in the previous year, in the current year they incurred new incidents of irregular expenditure. But in the previous year, although the amount was high, it was because it was ongoing contracts, which were some, they were cancelled in the previous year. However, the amount was a bit high there, but they didn't incur new incidents of irregular expenditure in the previous year. New incidents were incurred in the current year. However, the amount is immaterial, as it's about 200 million. So if we then move on there, this is just now the summary of what I was saying. So in terms of financial statements, they are unqualified in terms of performance information. There were no findings on the performance report. So the area of improvement you would see is on now compliance with legislation, because they had two paragraphs in the previous year's audit report of compliance, being the 30 days and material adjustments to financial statements. But we don't have that in the current financial year. So here I've also just indicated the best practices, which is to strengthen their internal controls, continuously maintain that stability in key positions, and also the tone at the top up. In the current year, we've really seen the involvement of the public protector herself. We've had quite a number of interactions. I remember after the previous year's audit outcome, we had a workshop where they invited us to just come and break down the audit outcomes and the areas that they would want to improve on. And after that, to ensure that the PPSA was following up on that, she also again invited us, wherein we shared with our status of records review. That was before they could even prepare the final financial statements, to say, look, these are the areas that require improvement. Look at these controls before you finalize your financial statements. So she was really involved, and I think she casted the message down to the officials who are actually responsible for the preparations of those reports, the financial statements, and also the performance reports. So again, the recommendation, I think it's basically what I've been saying throughout the presentation, to say they still need to strengthen their controls to ensure that we don't get those minor misstatements in their financial statements. They need to continuously follow up like this, to continuously follow up with their suppliers. It's mostly lawyers, to ensure that their invoices are timely submitted to the institution. And then again, they need to continuously monitor the audit action plans to prevent repeat audit findings. To the portfolio committee, there hasn't really been anything alarming in the audit, but I would just also then recommend that you then seek feedback in terms of implementation of the audit action plans. Then our overall message again is to commend PPSA for obtaining clean audit outcomes for the first time in their 25 years of existence. I think that's it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Office of the Auditor General. There is echo, I'm not sure where does it come from. I will now note hands from members who would want to make input, questions or comments. I have Honorable Mufukeng.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the reports of the OCJ and also on the public protector. Chair, I think you said it even earlier that the Department of Justice, their entities are doing very well, and this is the case also there. I'd like to actually commend OCJ and PPSA for their audit outcomes. Chair, I think what we need to follow up is on the issue of the ICT, because I have seen on their report of the OCJ, they don't have actually the DDG position is not filled yet, so that we can follow up as we go later. But we really have to commend their work and maybe be able to engage with them going forward in the issue of improvement, because if they can improve even further into the issue of the online and other things, will be able to can go even in a better way. But I just want to say that there's no any other question, but just to commend the two entities. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mfukeng. Any other member? Honorable Mola?
No, Chair, just one issue that I think we need to instruct the SIU to go and investigate. Why on
We can't hear you properly, Honorable Mora.
Can you hear me now, Chair?
Yes, we can.
Now I'm saying we just need to instruct the SIU to go investigate Honorable. Why did she say PPE instead of PPSA? I suspect something.
No. No, thank you very much, Honorable Mola. Is there any other question? I think that was on a lighter note. No, thank you very much to the Office of the Chief Justice and to the Office of the Public Protector. I think this is what we really expect from entities that we are engaging with to show improvement. Because, for instance, if you take the Office of the Public Protector, when we started in 2019, the report that we received from them was that they had achieved 50% of their targets. And then the following year, it was 74% of their targets. Now they've achieved 89% of their target. And you can see a relationship between that achievement and their improved financial management. So I think it's a good birthday present. And I think for the fact that in the 25 years of their existence, it is for the first time that they achieve a good audit, in fact, a clean audit, I think should be highly commended. Also the Office of the Chief Justice, I think it is leading by example to ensure that what you demand from other people, you can also, you can show that you can be able to achieve it yourself. I'm happy that the acting DG of Justice is present because we have said as a committee that Justice needs to convene a meeting with the accounting officers and senior managers of all the entities so that they can see best practices from also from the sister organization that they are working with. It's important that they do that. I think they will learn a lot from these organizations. It's good that also when a leader of an organization, in this case the public protector, herself showed interest and commitment in ensuring that the Office of the Public Protector achieved this clean audit. And she took an initiative to work very closely with the Office of the Auditor General. And the results we are seeing for with our own eyes. And I think the SG is also improvement, which is highly commendable. Hence, you're not seeing any questions. This question is directed to the acting DG. Have you met with the other organization, the other sister organization that you are working with? Acting DG?
Thank you, Chair. We have not met with the organizations as yet, but there is a planned meeting with the Office of the Public Protector in the next few days. The Entities Forum met once where the NPA and the OCJ, etc. are represented. We had a brief meeting a few months ago, but I think a specific meeting on best practices and to reflect on the audit outcomes of our department and the other entities that form part of the justice cluster falling under the mandate of the minister, I think we will have to convene a specific meeting in that regard soon after these briefings are over this week.
We have raised this matter more than two times and we have not done it. We have been saying that you have organizations like the the one that represents indigenous people, Legal Aid South Africa, that has achieved clean audit for 19 years. It has been the employer of choice for 11 consecutive years. And we have been saying that you must meet with these organizations to learn from them. It's over a year that we have been raising this matter, and you have not done it. So are you too proud to learn from the people you are working with?
No, Chair, that's not the issue. I thought you were reflecting on the current audit outcome. There is an entities forum that we have that the minister convened in Justice. We've had one meeting during the term that I was acting, and prior to that, there were other meetings when Advocate Kosana was acting, and during the term of DG Lucy Madonsela, there were also meetings. So there are ongoing engagements in that regard. I thought you were referring specifically to these audit outcomes and what has been the results of the Auditor General's report. And that we haven't done in respect of this issue. But there is an entities forum, and those meetings do happen on a quarterly basis.
So if you do have those meetings, why are you not improving? And all of them are showing improvement, so we're not learning anything from them.
Chair, over the last few years from our previous presentation to you, we have indicated the challenges we've had insofar as our human resources are concerned. And unfortunately, the department has had some very serious challenges with regard to senior management. And in particular, we've had an acting DG since October last year, 1 year without the accounting officer. And all of that has had a very negative impact on the department insofar as its performance and stability is concerned. That's one of the issues that we've raised. And over and above that, I think the budget cuts in our department over the years and the post-review committee where we had to manage the reduced budgets in terms of personnel, we've cut a lot of staff in terms of in critical areas, and we are now trying to just regroup and try and fit, and ensure that we have positions filled in key areas. And that's part of our rescue plan that we undertook to do on the last occasion that we met, to have a plan to fill the posts that are critical and to address the question of the leadership instability. And luckily, the appointment of the DG is now, the processes have been finalized from the department side, and the matter is waiting to serve in cabinet very shortly. And I think we've had, I think that instability has tremendously affected our performance in the department.
But how do you use budget cards when you've underspent about 764 million and you use it as an issue that needs you not to perform? And then when you have not appointed, you've just appointed a DDG for corporate services that has been vacant since 2016?
Chair, I have the amounts on the underspending. The large portion of that amount is in respect of the filling of posts for magistrates. And that is out of our hands insofar as the department is concerned on that underspending. And insofar as the DDG corporate services is concerned, we filled the post from the 1st of September. That has taken an inordinately long time. And I think that is a concern. And we've also recently filled the position of the Chief Master, who started on the 1st of November. And I think there's ongoing efforts to address those deficiencies that occurred in the previous financial years as well, which has had really a knock-on effect insofar as the performance of the department is concerned as well.
I think we'll be engaging with the minister on Friday, because as much as you are giving us these responses, they are grossly inadequate. They are grossly inadequate, and the impact is that the department is not meeting its target. And not meeting targets, it means that our people are not getting services. It's not just an exercise between you and me. It's an exercise on behalf of the people who are not getting services. And we don't take kindly to it at all. We don't take kindly to it. Thank you very much. Can we have now the Office of the Chief Justice presenting? Thank you very much, Office of the Auditor General. That is why we are saying that there has to be a greater attention paid to the Department of Justice, because you have been established to audit departments, not for the sake of it, but for the to ensure that resources of the state are used efficiently and prudently so that people get services that they deserve. Let's work together to ensure that there is improvement. We want to see the improvement that we have that has been shown by the Office of the Public Protector. The Office of the Chief Justice has always been performing well, but they continue to improve. But we want to repeat, we are concerned about the two departments. We are very concerned, and the budgets that are allocated to them are very big resources that are allocated to them. So if there are no proper accounting and processes, and there is leadership instability, there is high vacancy rate, we are deeply concerned, and we think that without consequence management, we are not going to get very far. So you use the law that has been given to you by Parliament to ensure that everybody is held accountable. Thank you very much. Office of the Chief Justice.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I am with the team here. For the interest of time, I'm not going to go on the introductions unless the Chairperson asks for. I'm with the CFO, the Head of Cost, the Head of Strategy and Reporting, as well as the Head of HR and Internal Audit. May I, Chairperson, also through you inform the Chairperson that our Audit and Risk Committee Chairperson is also online in the meeting. I'm not sure if he wants to say something or brief on the Portfolio Committee members. Advocate Huma is the Chairperson of the OCJ Audit and Risk Committee. Having said that, the presentation will be made by the head of the strategy and reporting, M&E and reporting, and maybe they should make the briefing notes before the presentation. May I request, as he outlined the presentation, Chairperson, that we skip the. This is the 15 slides that really talks to the mandate, the purpose of the presentation, the mandate, the mission, vision, etc. Unless the Chairperson feels that it must go through that, may I get your indulgence in that sense so that I can proceed from slide number 16, which talks to performance, since the Auditor General has already talked to some of these issues. Chairperson?
That's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, good morning. My name is Itumele Malau, and I'm going to be sharing with you the performance of the Office of the Chief Justice during the 1920 financial year. Chair, during this period, the Office of the Chief Justice had 20 planned targets, and out of the 20 planned targets, we achieved 14, and 6 were not achieved. And in terms of program performance, we've got 3 programs, which is Program 1, Administration, Program 2, Superior Court Services, and Program 3, Judicial Education and Support. Program 1 had 10 planned targets, and out of the 10, we achieved 7, 3 were not achieved. Program 2 had 6 planned targets, achieved 3, and 3 were not achieved. And Program 3 had 4 targets, and all the targets were achieved. Moving to the next slide, Chairperson. The slide focuses on the overall percentage achievement of the Office of the Chief Justice during the 1920 financial year. Overall, we achieved 70% of our targets and 30% was not achieved. And then next slide focuses on the overall performance over the five-year period. So you'll note that in the 2015-16 financial year, the Office of the Chief Justice had 35 targets pledged. And during that period, we achieved 26 and 9 were achieved. In the 16-17 financial year, we had 20 targets and 17 were achieved, 3 were not achieved. And in the 17-18 financial year, we had 19 targets and all the targets were achieved. In the 18-19 financial year, we had 20 targets planned, 18 were achieved, 2 were not achieved. And in the 19-20 financial year, we had 20 targets, 14 achieved and 6 not achieved. The next slide focuses on the percentage achievement for the same period. 15-16, we achieved 74%. 16-17, 85%. 17-18 financial year, 100%. 18-19 financial year, 90%. And the 19-20, 70%. So as already indicated, for the 19-20 financial year, we had 20 planned targets, of which 14 translating to 70% were achieved. And Chairperson, we are delighted to report to the Portfolio Committee that once again the OCJ has achieved an unqualified audit opinion with no material findings for the 1920 financial year, which is commonly known as the clean audit. The key achievement for the 1920 financial year, Chair, includes, amongst others, unqualified audit outcome with no material findings for the 18-19 financial year, the vacancy rate of 8.9%, which is below the 10% target as set by DPSA. And during this period, the official opening of the Mpumalanga Division of the High Court was part of the government's commitment, as part of the government's commitment to bring justice closer to the people. And we've also implemented a combined assurance plan in 25 and 24 superior courts. And as part of court modernization, the judiciary, judiciary supported by the OCJ piloted case line solution in Gauteng Division of the High Court. And we also implemented fraud prevention strategy in 24 Superior Court. And lastly, conducted 115 skills enhancing judicial education courses for both judicial officers and aspiring judicial officers against the target of 80%. In terms of our program structure, OCJ carries out its mandate through three programs, as already indicated: Administration, Program 1, and Program 2, Superior Court Services, and Program 3, Judicial Education and Support. The performance in relation to Program 1, the detailed performance, Program 1 had a total of 10 targets, and of which 7 were achieved, translating to 70%. With your permission, I'd like to focus on those targets that were not achieved in this particular instance. And the first target that was not achieved under Program 1 was the target on OCJ performance plan compliant with the national prescripts tabled in Parliament as the national treasury timelines. And the actual achievement for this particular target was OCJ annual performance plan compliant with the national prescripts not tabled in Parliament as the national treasury timeline. And the reason for deviation, the deviation from the plan target was the OCJ performance plan was not tabled in Parliament as the national treasury timeline. And the reason for deviation was that the tabling of the APP was not done before the end of March 2020 due to competing priorities relating to COVID-19 pandemic. The other target under Program 1 that was not achieved was the target on prioritized projects of ICT Master System Plan rolled out in 5 superior courts. And the actual achievement was prioritized project of ICT Master System Plan was not rolled out in all 5 superior courts. And the deviation was e-filing project not rolled out in 5 superior courts as planned. And the reason, for deviation was that the project was put on hold for a long time due to the challenges experienced by CETA in deploying resources. However, a component of the e-filing project, in particular the case line, was piloted in Gauteng Division. The last target that was not achieved under Program 1 was on percentage of audit projects completed in line with the approved annual audit plan. The plan target was to do 100% of all the audit projects, and the actual achievement was 97%, and the deviation thereof was 3%. And the reason for deviation of the comments in that regard was compliance audit project was not completed due to COVID-19 lockdown restrictions. Moving to Program 2, Chairperson, Program 2 had a total of 6 targets, and 3 were achieved, translating to 50%, and 3 were not achieved. And the targets that were not achieved were as follows. The first one is an objective indicator, and the first target was on ensuring effective and efficient administration of superior court. And the plan target was to ensure treatment of party judicial targets, and we plan to do 100%, and we achieved 98%, and the deviation was 2%. And the reason for deviation was number of applications were referred back to litigants due to non-compliance with the rules. The next one under Program 2 that was not achieved was the target on percentage of default judgments finalized by registrars per year. The target again was to finalize 100%. We managed to achieve 98% in that regard, and 2% was not achieved. And the reason for deviation again was number of applications referred back to litigants due to non-compliance with the rules. And the last one under Program 2 that was not achieved was percentage of taxations on legal costs finalized per year. The target again was 100%. And the actual achievement was 99%, and the deviation was 1%, and the same reason applies, which is the number of applications were referred back to litigants due to non-compliance with the rules. Program 3, Chairperson, had a total of 4 targets. They achieved all their targets. I'm going to skip that one, and I'm going to move straight to the audit coverage scope, which is slide 39. Chairperson, during this reporting period, the Auditor General, the Auditor General basically focused on the following areas: annual financial statements, as well as annual performance information and compliance with legislation. And for the, we do a comparative analysis for 18-19, and during that period, there were no material findings, as the Auditor General has already indicated. And the following slide focuses on the audit outcome, as the AG has already alluded. If you look at the top left quadrant, you will notice that during the previous 3 financial years, the OCJ has been receiving unqualified audit outcome. And in terms of assurance level, focusing on the right top quadrant, you will notice that there were 3 levels of assurance that the AG has already indicated. And in terms of the first level of assurance, the only area that is still concerning is with regard to senior management, which we are still working on, and we hope to improve it in the next financial year. Focusing on the bottom right, the drivers of internal control, there's 3 issues that we focus on, which is leadership, the financial performance management, as well as governance. And the areas that are still of great concern is the first one, human resource management, and all other areas under leadership are doing well. And the other area under financial performance well that are still of concern is the processing and the reconciling control, the compliance monitoring, as well as the ICT system control. And under governance, we are doing well, as you can see, that is green. And lastly, under risk areas, the only areas that are still of great concern to us is the areas relating to HR, human resource management, as well as information technology. Chairperson, I'd like to hand over to the Chief Financial Officer, who will take us through the financial performance of the institution during the reporting period. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Thank you very much. Chairperson and Honourable Members, you will recognise these slides from our previous Q4 performance. The figures have not changed. What I would, however, like to do is to go to the very next slide, and I just want to highlight a few issues on the next slide, which deals with the economic classification and the underspending and in one instance overspending. If you look at the column under the heading 2019-20, you will see the over or under expenditure reflected there, and I want to quickly deal with the underspending on the compensation of employees, which amounts to 51.846 million. The reasons for this underspending is twofold. The full amount that is reflected there includes the part of the judges' salaries under the direct charge allocation, and the other portion reflects the OCJ's voted funds, the salary expenditure on the employees and officials. So the total amount of 51 million is broken down as follows. An amount of approximately 30 million is underspent on the judges' salary. And the main reason for this underspending is the fact that there was a 0% salary increase for public office bearers in the previous financial year. And the budget of the OCJ already included a 5% provision for salary increases. And therefore, there was a major underspending of 30 million on judges' salary. The rest of the money, the underspending is about 21 million that is on the voted funds where the officials are paid from. And the reason for this underspending is a higher than normal attrition rate on officials who either resign or move to other departments in government. And our vacancy rate, if you look at our reporting, also increased from an average of about 4% in previous years to around 8.8% in the previous financial year. So we had a very high turnover and a high vacancy rate, which then is reflected in the underspending on compensation. The next classification is a 26 million underspending on goods and services. And the main reasons for underspending there are threefold. Firstly, the reason for underspending is the cost containment measures that we've implemented on the traveling of both judges and officials in the previous financial year in line with the Treasury cost containment prescripts. The next reason for underspending is, and we've reported this previously in the Portfolio Committee, is the judges who implemented voluntary cost containment on some of the legislated benefits, which we are seeing the results now. And one of the issues is the lower amount allocated for the purchasing of their motor vehicles, which we see the expenditure now also decreasing. And then the first major reason for underspending is the OCJ is in a process of implementing unified communication systems. And the unified, sorry, Chair, are we still audible?
Yes, you are.
Okay. We are implementing a project called Unified Communication Systems, where we move away from telecom telephone systems in the courts to voice over internet protocol. We are about halfway there of our 24 sites, and we've seen a major reduction in the telephone costs due to this effort or this implementation of this project. And that is another reason we've underspent a lot of money on communications classification as, item as well. Then you will see one instance of overspending, the 24,000 in red in brackets. And the reason for that overspending is we had to repair a motor vehicle that was in an accident. And as you would know, government is not allowed to budget for vehicle accident repairs. We are in self-insured, and therefore any cost relating to the damage, repairing of damaged assets will be reflected as a payment for financial assets, which you do not budget for. So whenever you expend, it will always show as an overspending on that item. That basically deals with the presentation on the financial performance, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I conclude with maybe highlighting some of the issues that I anticipate the committee will also like to look at. Maybe firstly, just to add that in addition to the plan that we are, the APP that we are reporting on for the year under review, we also support the judiciary plan and their annual report. Which
the judges are faced with, prepared by the Chief Justice, as well as to indicate that the JSC report for the year is also being finalized and it shall be submitted under signature of the Chief Justice as by the statute to Parliament. Just in passing, we also run as part of the compliance issues relating to the DPME as it controls planning, an operational plan with 59 targets. Though unaudited, we have also had a high percentage of achievement on our targets, though it's not part of the portfolio committee work as such, just for noting. We also would like to bring to the attention of the committee around the COVID-19 progress. We have now 97% reporting for duty at level one of the lockdown. We have 148 positive cases and 141 recoveries and 37 officials working from home due to comorbidities in terms of the rules. That is the status with regards to COVID. The other issues relate to compliance with the direction, etc. But we are doing, and I think we continue to make sure that we are compliant in that sense, wearing of masks, sanitization, and deep cleaning of the offices as and when issues arise. With regards to HR issues, may I mention that I think one of the honorable members raised the issue of the DDGs. Just to give feedback to the committee that the two DDGs have been appointed, the process is finalized. For the first time, the OCJ will have the two DDGs, one responsible for court administration services and one responsible for corporate services. And they will both start on duty on the 1st of December 2020. So that is progress on our side. The other issues I will leave there because they are contained in the annual report. I anticipate the committee would want to get something related to ICT, just to give the, without going into detail as indicated the last time, that the investigation is still ongoing as even today, but just to give the committee an assurance that the recovery process is in line. We have ensured that the judges and the courts are prioritized in terms of making sure that the system is brought back and online. So the email platform, internet, as well as the transversal systems are back and functional. So I would just want to give an indication to the committee that the ICT environment is receiving urgent attention as priority, and as well as utilizing the opportunity to refresh and modernize the infrastructure around the ICT in the department to make sure that we prevent some of the issues that have befallen us. That including also upgrading our operating systems, etc. But I am saying this guardedly, Chairperson, because I also don't want for the second time to say I can't say much, and it feels like I am not really wanting to report on what we are doing, just to give assurance that we are working on the ICT environment, and we have several projects that we also have that are looking at addressing some of the issues that we are looking at. So that is in general what the last comments I wanted to make, Honorable Chairperson and members, and the Chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee, as I said, is there. I'm not sure if you'd like to say anything. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I think it's good that you brought the Chairperson of the Audit and Risk. We have to give her an opportunity to say something.
Advocate Huma. Which we're also checking on him on the line, Chairperson, to see that he's on.
My apologies, I was muted. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members of the committee. I'm delighted to have been given this opportunity. Let me give a short and brief background. I was instrumental in establishing the Audit and Risk Committee for the Office of the Chief Justice for the last 6 years, and we have created and established a solid audit committee with the governance structures functioning optimally. In the first 3 years, we managed to obtain unqualified audits, obviously with the work and teaming with management, the Auditor General, and the internal audit function. And in the last 3 years, we have assisted management to obtain 3 consecutive clean audits. I must congratulate and commend management of the OCJ for the willingness to work and partner with all key stakeholders in ensuring that there's good governance and clean administration within the Office of the Chief Justice. It has not been a very easy task. It required a lot of effort on the part of all the role players. However, this does not mean that there are no challenges. We do have some challenges, particularly in the areas of ICT, as well as human resources management. Those two areas we are continuously monitoring and receiving reports on how best we can improve those two areas. But overall, the internal controls are satisfactory and the internal audit is functioning optimally with the support of management. And our performance information processes across the country in all the superior courts is functioning well, despite the fact that it's not enabled by technology. So technology would in the future play a very critical part in ensuring that services are delivered promptly and we are able to process our reports in a timely manner. We must also thank the Auditor General for the spirit of cooperation and the feedback that we have received over the years. The teaming has resulted in better audit outcomes, and also the leadership of the accounting officer and the executive who are willing and ready to receive advice as and when it's provided in respect of the areas for which we have oversight. Chair and members, thank you very much for the opportunity. If there are any questions, I'm more than willing to answer all your questions.
Thank you very much, Advocate Huma. I've noted the following hands: Honorable Horn, Honorable Mufokeng, Honorable Nipo Drachens. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. And from our side, I think we must obviously firstly congratulate the Office of the Chief Justice on what would seem by and large from the annual report and the audit report that they are a department we don't need to lose sleep about. And we thank them for that. Chair, Secretary General has referred to continued involvement regarding developments around ICT, and I would have hoped that they possibly would have made use today of briefing us properly about the outcomes of the Caseline pilot project, which unfortunately is not here. To the best of my knowledge, it is of course so that it was not necessarily finalized within the financial year in respect of which the annual report has been compiled. But the reality is we as a committee, I think, look towards the Caseline pilot project as hopefully giving a lot of answers. And now, based on what we, along with the rest of the country, learned through the media, it seems that it's not it is not clear from the pilot project whether it is the answer, and one took note of the comments made by the judge president of the Gauteng division in respect of specifically the failures in North Gauteng. But I would very much like to hear whether conclusions have been drawn from the experiences during caseline, whether it is seen by the Office of the Chief Justice as the solution or part of the solution going forward, whether there was an analysis, a proper analysis, and what the results were of such an analysis as to what went wrong in North Gauteng, how it can be addressed, to what extent were the failures ascribed to human resource failures, to what extent was the pilot in North Gauteng hampered by the ICT infrastructure, and to what extent does the intermittent provision of electricity in South Africa, what we know as load shedding, to what extent did that impact on the efficacy of the caselines system during the pilot? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpukeng.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation of OCJ and the Secretary General and your team. And I would like to congratulate you on the work well done, especially on the audit outcome. And thanks for anticipating the question on the ICT, even if I can see Honorable Horn has taken that to the next level, if maybe you can maybe go further into that. I want to check if there's any plans of maybe amending the rules of the court to cater for online civil procedures and even new rules for virtual settings, because you cannot just start on that without going into that. The other one is that you are doing well in terms of your finances, but I realize that you have a high turnover of staff in the supply chain management. Is that the problem rectified or what? And then on the issue of the performance agreements, how far is the process, because they were in the bargaining council due to some of the senior management not signing? And those are the only questions. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nicole Drachen.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I basically have the same questions relating to ICT that was already asked, but I wanted to know the pilot project. What were the positive outcomes of that, and if those outcomes can be replicated in other courts that you wanted in your targets? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Esther?
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. We thank you for the words of encouragement on the outcome of the audit. I would ask the CFO as well as the Chief Director responsible for court administration to respond to the matter relating to the outcome of the pilot project in Gauteng. Regarding the performance agreement relating to the senior manager, the matter is relating to a manager who is who has a dispute and is before the bargaining process or the labor relations forum. So that is the issue relating to that performance agreement, which forms part of the matters of dispute. The matter relating to the turnover of staff in the SCM, may I ask the CFO to be paused under him also to make a comment, then we will move to the rest of the other questions of ICT.
Thank you, ESG. I think the
the question relating to turnover of staff, we've indicated that there's a high turnover of staff in general. It's mainly in the court administration environment. The SEM unit is stable. We do not have any turnover on the SEM. And I think it also reflects in the audit outcomes where we also didn't have any findings in SEM. So the turnover that we referred to was more in the court environment, in the core function, registrars and those types of positions that we are concerned about.
Thank you, Etienne, thank you, Chair. I'm going to respond to the issue of case lines in general in ICT, and I'll start by saying that the automation of courts is one of the Chief Justice's priorities supported by the head of court. It's a matter that we have been working on for quite a period of time to ensure that most of our court processes are automated. To that end, we then got CETA to assist us to develop a solution that we refer to as Court Online. Previously, it was called e-filing. The Court Online has two components. The first component is called CRM Dynamics or Case Management. It's a component that is public facing that the members of the public litigants will interact with. And that component is under development. There has been delays for quite a number of months. And it's bound to be finished hopefully by we're looking at April next year, to be piloted April next year in Southeast. The second component, which is the back end of this particular solution called Court Online, is what is referred to as evidence management, commonly known as case line. Now, what happened is that when there was a delay with the piloting or the development of the front part of the solution, which is case management or CRM Dynamics, a decision was taken to say this, but the case line, which is the back end, is mostly used by judges, can be used because it was readily available in anticipation of the pilot project. It was then decided that it shall be implemented in Gauteng. And I have to emphasize this, there was never at any given point an anticipation that case line would have been implemented and piloted on its own, because that is not what we sought out to do, or the Chief Justice and the judges sought out to do. It was because of the circumstances that prevailed at the time, and we felt that there was a part of the solution that could be implemented, albeit only for the judges to use. Of course, in Gauteng, we became creative with the judge president, and part of this solution was then used to allow litigants actually to load cases on the system, which is not what it initially was designed to do. So I want to indicate that so the solution in its entirety has two components, and that is what the judiciary would like to implement, which should be implemented hopefully by April next year. Both the front portion, which is case management or CRM dynamics, and case line. Now, of course, there are lessons that we've learned from the pilot project of case line in Gauteng, and part of which is what people have complained about. Because the solution was never meant to be implemented in the manner that we did, as I said, because of the circumstances that prevailed, and it has also assisted us during the lockdown and during COVID, it created certain problems. As I said, it's not meant for litigants to load documents on it, but because of that, a lot of challenges were experienced. And we have learned that it would not be advisable to implement it in isolation as not part of the complete solution, as I said before. and the judges have said that we should implement or wait and implement the solution in entirety. So that is basically what there is on the issue of case line and how it should be implemented going forward. So when we come back, hopefully around June next year, we'll be talking about an end-to-end solution, which is court online, where litigants will be able to create cases, summons will be issued online, and so forth. Now, there was a second question on the whether it's possible to change the rules so that the civil proceedings can be heard online. The issue of the rules, maybe part of the court online is a big project, is that the rules are supposed to be amended or developed so that they are aligned to the automation of the proceedings and processes at court. And the judge president Mlambo is in charge of that process of changing the rules. It is at an advanced stage. We hope that at the time when we then pilot the court online solution next year, that the rules will be ready. But if that doesn't happen, as you might have seen, the judges presidents have the prerogative and the chief justice to issue directives to guide how the process should be conducted at a particular court. So that process of the amendment of the rules, as you know, it goes to the rules board and so forth, is underway, and hopefully when we pilot the court online solution next year, they will be completed by then. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson and the honorable members. I hope we have covered all the questions.
No, thank you very much, SG, and to your team. I think this issue of the ICT, the day we finally get an opportunity to discuss with the Chief Justice and the Head of Court, it will be one of our priorities. And maybe for the benefit of members who were not part of the committee, in the last administration or in the last parliament, or when you started with this system, were there any international benchmarkings that were done, especially with developed and developing countries, with regard to the issue of court modernization, especially countries like India, that are very good in ICT, but also to a certain extent share the common law, a legal system like ours. And what lessons generally have you learned from the COVID, and to what an extent can the fourth industrial revolution be integrated to improve the system? Because I always get a sense that we want to employ very expensive systems, but that are still in the third industrial revolution, that are not fully integrating artificial intelligence to improve efficiencies. Maybe if we can we can be furnished with that information. Just a few questions on my side. I think this question arose in our last engagement, I think even with the Department of Justice. It's a question that I think is very urgent between the Department of Justice and yourselves. It's the issue of security in courts. And the fact that sometimes you are talking about procuring private security, I think it's something that really needs to be discussed. Because most of these big private security companies are not even South African companies. So I remember when we asked the Department of Justice last time they appeared, we did not get a satisfactory answer. I think when we come back next year is something that we need to really focus on, especially with the incidences that have happened in the Free State, where there were threats to the court administration, and that the issue of security it becomes very key and very urgent, because if court officials, including judges and prosecutors, might have or might be intimidated, it would really affect their impartiality in certain cases, and the implications are far more far-reaching. So we do need to urgently deal with the issue of court security between ourselves and yourself and the Department of Justice. And then the last one is the issue of the wellness program, especially who are dealing with criminal law cases, especially your sexual offense cases, even murder cases, which exposes them to hear very gruesome evidence, which has serious impact on their ability to cope and possibilities that they might suffer depression. And we think that it's something that needs to be really prioritized, because, for instance, as we strengthen all our systems and laws to fight domestic violence, we think that more cases should be prosecuted, and hearing cases of rapes and all of those cases of rapes and murders do have serious impact on the people who are prosecuting, even hearing those cases. So the issue of wellness program for the judicial officers, and I think even for the prosecutors, but we'll discuss that with the NPA, it's something that really needs urgent attention. I don't think it's a luxury. It's something that is important for the proper administration of justice. Over to you, SJ.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have noted the Chairperson's comment with regards to raising the matter of ICT with the Chief Justice. As you said, it is one of the priority issues. I will also, on my side, communicate the same. And I also note your concerns around issues of security in the court, which is still a service that is provided to our side through the DOJ, and I've noted that both the departments will have to come to the party to account to the committee on this issue. On the wellness program, the heads of court are already seized with this matter, which they have discussed extensively and echoing the same sentiments that the Chairperson is echoing. And they have put in place the plans on their side to have a wellness program for the judiciary established. And I think it's one of the issues which the committee, when it meets with the Chief Justice, can be shared with, by the Chief Justice with that. But that program is already in the hands of the head of court, chaired by the Chief Justice. I think I've covered, I don't know, colleagues, did I cover
it? Yeah, you've covered.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. Or the international studies. Sorry, Chairperson, there was an issue around the benchmarking with international studies. And I think tied to what I already alluded and what the Chairperson has alluded, the Chief Justice and the team of judges did take studies abroad to look at various countries around how courts, the modernization of the courts is happening in other jurisdictions and looking at the various lessons there. I think I can remember off my head Singapore, Malaysia, I think at some point even the judges from Malaysia came here to the workshop with the session with the judges. I think there has been those that were undertaken by the Chief Justice and the judges in that respect. Thank you, Chairperson. Including about the studies abroad, and that was also utilized with the development of the Master Systems Plan, which is the ICT plan that was developed by the OCJ with a huge input from the judges themselves, which is one of the part of the project that we are implementing in the SFT, MST, which is the court online that the head of the courts have already alluded to. So those best practices were utilized with regard to the development of the Master Systems Plan. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, SG, and to your team. I don't see any further hands or follow-ups. Thank you very much for your presentation and for the areas of improvement. We appreciate that comments that are made by the committee and concerns that are made by the committee are taken on board as part of your continuous improvement on your work. Hence, there is this improvement, we really do appreciate. We will continue to, on our side, to ensure that we, through the office of the speaker, we try to secure this meeting with the Chief Justice so that as members of parliament, we can have a meaningful engagement with the judiciary and the Chief Justice on some of the issues that we think that are of mutual interest for both the committee and the judiciary. Early next year, we would also call on you, we'll call a meeting that would involve you and the Department of Justice to discuss this issue of security, because we think that it is very important. So thank you very much, members. Sia, are you there?
Yes, Chair. I'm here, Chair.
Can you just brief members about the program for tomorrow and Friday? And the issue that relates to the Department of Correctional Services and the Office of the Auditor General.
Okay, Chair. Yes, Chair. We have sent out a notice for this week. It did not include the meeting of Friday. The reason for that, it was because we needed to still apply. We have received permission to meet on Friday. So we're going to meet on Friday at 2:00 to get the political overview from the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services. Point two is that tomorrow we're going to be dealing with the gender domestic violence bill, and we're going to be receiving a briefing by the Department of Justice. That is for tomorrow morning. And we have since applied to sit after the House sitting of tomorrow. But we were going to send in we have already received permission to sit after tomorrow. So if we don't finish in the morning session, we'll have to convene immediately after the House sitting. We've been granted permission to sit. But we will send out a notice to this effect immediately after this meeting, Chair. That with regards to the Department of Correctional Services, they have not yet tabled their annual report when we were in this meeting as we speak. The Auditor General has since sent the Chairperson a letter of which we are going to distribute as well after the meeting, stating the why the Auditor General, even themselves, haven't finalized the audit with regards to the Department of Correctional Services. So we then thought that the Department of Correctional Services must brief us next week in terms of their annual report so that they can take this rest of this week and finalize the issue between themselves and the Auditor General in terms of the performance information and the financial statements, Chair. So in a nutshell, Chair, in summary, tomorrow we're getting the domestic violence bill and the Department of Justice. And if you don't finish, later on, we will then have to convene after the house. Then on Friday from 2 o'clock, we're getting the overview from the Minister, Chair. I thank you, Chair. I think I've covered.
Yes, no, thank you very much, Mr. Mthonjeni. And then I think I will just add two things. We have not yet received a permission from the Speaker on the issue of the permission to advertise for the position of the Commission for the South African Human Rights Commission. Remember, there are two vacant positions. One is for the commissioner whose term is ending in February next year, and then the other one, for that one we do have a permission. It was referred to us some time back, but subsequent to that, then there was a passing away of the deputy chairperson of the commission, Ambassador Priscilla Jana. And so we thought that we should have one advert calling for nomination. So we're still waiting for the Speaker to refer the matter to us. That is one issue. Then the second one, we have not yet received the Correctional Services Amendment Bill. It was sent to us for information and we did receive a briefing. But for us to advertise and invite public comments, it has to be formally referred to us. We have been advised that it is still with the state law advisors. So it is not yet with us. So we can't also advertise until the bill has been referred to us. The challenge with it is that we have a deadline. That the bill, in fact, bill must be passed by both NA and NCOP and accepted too by the President before the 21st of May 2021. Looking at the NA processes and NCOP processes and the fact that we are going for December break, we are a little bit tense whether we would be able to meet that particular deadline. It's something that we have raised in the committee, that we are receiving bills very late, and Parliament is then accused of not meeting Constitutional Court deadlines, and we have always expressed our displeasure that the executive leave the bills until very late, and then we are left with very few or very little time to comply with the Constitutional Court deadlines. And then when we don't meet, not out of our own making, then it's Parliament that is accused of not meeting Constitutional Court deadline. This is one of those bills that is really giving me sleepless nights, because with other bills, for instance, your cannabis bills, there were always the Constitutional Court would give a read-in provision which would kick in if there is no amendment to the legislation. But with this one, the read-in provision would lapse on the 21st of May, so there will be a gap in the law. And if there is that gap in the law, Parliament is going to be on the spotlight. We have tried to put the necessary pressure on the executive to ensure that we receive the bill and we process the bill in time. The bill is not with us, it's still with the state law advisor. That is all, members. I can see Honorable Nibot Tehan has raised her hand.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just wanted to double check with the committee secretary. He said that the it's only the domestic violence bill that we have on the meeting. Tomorrow morning. But are we still getting the annual report on the Justice Department of Justice's annual report? It's also on the program for tomorrow. So will we still receive that? Because you only mentioned that if we don't complete domestic violence deliberations in the morning, we will continue after plenary. So will that be continued after plenary as well, the annual report? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Now we'll be dealing with both the domestic violence and the annual report. So that is why if we don't finish before 2, then we'll have to come back and get the annual report. But we'll have to deal with both. We are under a lot of pressure to conclude both the BRRR and push also the legislation on our side. So we'll do both domestic violence and the Justice's annual report.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. In the absence of further questions, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.